You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Well, obviously coming off a very successful 2016 season, how difficult is it for this team to put Game 7 and that disappointment behind them and really concentrate on moving forward?
Well, I think there was such a sense of satisfaction over the fact that they got as far as they did. I mean, they were operating with 2.5 starting pitchers. Terry Francona was leaning more on a bullpen than most managers would in a postseason setting. And I feel like they didn't have Michael Brantley. They didn't have Danny Salazar, Carlos Carrasco. This is a team that, even though the loss was so difficult to swallow, they felt, you know, happy with what they were able to do under depleted circumstances. And I feel like now, coming into spring, the senses among this team that they have their team back. And if they can get that far with a team that was as injury-riddled as it was, there's a lot of confidence that with health, they have the ability to get right back there. And even in the wake of Game 7 in that clubhouse, guys were already talking about getting to spring training, getting this thing started again. You know, there's that real sense of unfinished business. And instead of that normal spring optimism, it's instead of we believe we can do it, there's a group of guys that say, we know we can do it. We were just there.
Is Kansas City Royals someone that they're obviously familiar with within the division? Are they sort of the model of how to get over a difficult, heartbreaking Game 7 and focus on the task at hand and go out there and win the next year?
Yeah, Indians manager Terry Francona and multiple players have already referenced the Royals. Like, look, it's not that long ago that we can point to a team that had this exact situation. They lost Game 7 at home. It was crushing. They came back a year later, way more experienced, got there again and won the whole thing. So, you know, a lot of players aren't necessarily in tune with the long history of the game, but when something's as recent as that and is so similar as that, they can definitely point to it as an example. And this Indians team is kind of built similarly to those Royals teams.
Is it possible that this team is just skimming the surface of their potential? Because as you said, there were so many key components that weren't available to them during the postseason run because of injury, and now they're healthy.
Right, and I think if you look at the core group, it's still a relatively young core here. You know, they have some veterans mixed in, some guys they have acquired, but it's still a relatively young team, so they feel like it's not just 2017. You know, they're going to be contending in 2018, 2019, 2020. You know, they really like the core that they have in place, but they recognize that their window is right now and right in front of them, and that's why you see a team go out and get an Edwin Encarnacion. The Cleveland Indians don't normally play in free agency like that, but they've recognized, we just got to the World Series, we have a need. Signing Edwin Encarnacion, bringing in Boone Logan, you know, those are big-time moves for a team that doesn't normally operate like that. And that really shows how much they want to capitalize on this window.
Let's talk about a couple of individuals and their health. What is Michael Brantley's situation right now, and what are the realistic expectations that he'll be ready for opening day?
Yeah, I mean, no one is talking about opening day yet. He's still sort of penciled in. He's working through soft toss drills right now. It feels very similar to a year ago. But the difference is this year they really want to make sure that when he comes back, he's back. You know, last year, whether it was based on the feedback he was giving, feedback doctors were giving, you know, he would ramp up through these early hitting stages, and then he'd get into games, and that's when he would hit a setback. So they're really taking it slow. You know, they want to make sure he plays in multiple games, doesn't experience setbacks before they really have that clear gauge on where he's at. So they're really hopeful that he'll contribute this year and that the experience of his comeback and rehab and setbacks last year will help him better know how to give them proper feedback this time around.
Carrasco seems healthy. What's his workload going to be like in the spring? Because I feel like they want to stretch him out a little bit more, so he might pitch a few more innings than he's normally accustomed to.
Right. I think the good news about Carrasco's injuries last year was that they didn't affect his arm. You know, so he only pitched around 140 innings, but it wasn't because his elbow was hurt or his shoulder was hurt. So this is a guy they want to be really aggressive with in spring training. He's back at 100%, and Mickey Callaway, the pitching coach, and Francona have both said, you know, you're probably going to see Carrasco lead the team in innings this spring. It's a longer spring. They can afford to do that. Similarly, Danny Salazar got back into games in the World Series. He wasn't stretched out to start, so he entered the offseason much more confident in his own health, and he's another guy that they're going to be aggressive with this spring, knowing that he's back at 100% and knowing that he didn't log the type of innings that Corey Kluber, Josh Tomlin, or even Trevor Bauer did last year.
The organization's going to miss Mike Napoli, not only for what he does on the field, but obviously in the clubhouse. But they made a big splash signing in Edwin Encarnacion. What does he bring to this team, and how surprised were you, someone that follows the organization, that they went and made this move?
Yeah, I think the assumption was always that Napoli was going to be re-signed. I mean, and even to the point that when they signed Edwin Encarnacion, Terry Francona's one of his first texts was to Mike Napoli to let him know that, you know, just when you have a chance to go out and get an Encarnacion, a team like the Indians has to go do it, especially in the situation that they're in. His leadership that he brought to the clubhouse last year, Mike Napoli, you know, that's still going to be felt here this year. Guys like Jason Kipnis, Tyler Naquin, you know, those younger guys, those core guys, really, they're going to feed off that and learn from it and be able to apply it, especially now having gone through it themselves. But again, when a team like the Indians has this unique opportunity and the resources now to go out and get an Edwin Encarnacion, you know, he fits right in the middle of that lineup, provides that just impact bat, a guy who's consistent and one of the premier sluggers in the game, and really gives this lineup a very deepened look throughout the middle.
One of the best things about spring training is you get to see some of these position battles and spots on the pitching staff play out. But this is a team that really has many of their positions already filled. So where are we going to see some of those battles, maybe in a utility guy on the bench and certainly on the staff as far as the bullpen even shapes up?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the mark of a good team when there's a lack of competition in spring training. You never know what's going to happen injury-wise throughout the course of a long spring. But right now, it's that last spot or two in the bullpen. And as you mentioned, the utility role off the bench. So they're looking at guys like Eric Gonzalez, Michael Martinez, and even a prospect like Ronnie Rodriguez for that utility role. And then for the bullpen, I mean, there's a long list of names. Some that stand out are young guys like Percy Garner, Sean Armstrong. Do they want to go with a Mike Clevenger, who they used in the bullpen last year? It's going to be interesting to see how those races do develop to fill out, you know, the final spots on this roster that returns mostly intact. And then beyond that, they're going to be looking at younger guys, prospects like Brad Zimmer, Greg Allen, Yandy Diaz, again, Mike Clevenger, Cody Anderson, Ryan Merritt. These are guys that may not factor into the Major League opening day roster, but who very likely at some point could impact this team during the regular season. We saw last year, Ryan Merritt pitched them into the World Series. He wasn't on anyone's radar in spring training a year ago.
To that point, finally, who are some young players that you're keeping an eye out that could be impactful maybe in September or maybe in the next few years down the road?
Yeah, again, as I mentioned, I think Brad Zimmer, Greg Allen, Yandy Diaz are kind of the three guys that really stand out. Yandy Diaz might be the closest to the big leagues. He plays third base, plays some outfield, kind of like that Jose Ramirez type role, and as a really high contact hitter, a guy whose offensive skill set might translate more immediately to the big leagues. Zimmer and Allen are center fielders of the future. It's going to be interesting how this plays out. Zimmer will probably play center at AAA. Allen might go to AA just so they can both stay in center. Allen last year had 119 runs scored and 45 stolen bases, came into camp, won their endurance test, you know, really blew away the Major League staff. I mean, they feel like this guy could be maybe even like a Rajay Davis type player eventually down the road. And obviously Brad Zimmer is their number one prospect, a guy who they're reworking his hitting mechanics and are hoping to unlock more power and consistency and the type of hitting that will be able to be sustainable at the Major League level.
How's the camp different now with Renteria as manager than last year?
Well, I think it's not so much Rick as manager, because Rick was here last year as the bench coach, although he was getting to know the organization. But I think it's just the players they have now. You know, they have undergone the first full rebuild in about two decades. They tried one sort of a rebuild and kind of win at the same time starting in 2013 and 14, and that didn't kind of click all the way through. And now they've, you know, decided not to kind of piecemeal things together. They're going full, you know, trying to go full young players by trading Chris Sale, trading Adam Eaton. I'm sure there's more trades to come whenever they may come about. But, you know, so you see a lot of high-end young players in this camp, which you haven't seen before. You see a Michael Kopech. You see Yoan Moncada. You see Lucas Giolito, Ronaldo Lopez, Zach Birdie, Zach Collins. The list goes on. I don't want to leave anyone out, but those are the ones that jump out. So I think it's not so much that Rick Renteria is doing something that's that different from Robin's 5 years, but it's just the players are different this time around and a much more younger bent to the camp.
Well, just listening into the clubhouse, you know, from afar, I mean, he's doing Joe Maddon kind of stuff. They're having fun in there during their meetings and stuff like that. Robin's a pretty laid-back kind of guy. It's not, I'm not dissing Robin at all, but, you know, Rick seems to have a different style.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's got a different style. Rick is an interesting character in that he's very comfortable in himself, Rick Renteria. So was Robin, for that matter. But I mean, he's kind of a storyteller, mm-hmm. and he's very like kind of hands on. You always see him talking to players. I know there was one time early in camp, like about the fourth or fifth day, guys were coming off after stretching, and him and bench coach Joe McEwing were just kind of standing there, and almost as like a greeting line. They were shaking hands. Like, I think it was before the position players came in, so they were just shaking hands. Like each pitcher who came out, talking about the day and that kind of thing. And that's kind of Rick. You know, he's a very energetic, very upbeat kind of guy. I don't think he's going to be a guy who, you know, says things that causes controversy. I just think he believes in doing things the right way, having fun. You know, he knows it's a job, but it's also baseball. Enjoy yourself. And, you know, he understands that this year, winning doesn't necessarily mean 85 wins or 90 wins. It may be 72 wins, but it may be the process that has the White Sox winning this year and developing young players, doing things the right way, and kind of building a core for the future.
Talk about the pitching. Starting pitching, there seems to be depth there, and is there a spot for Lucas Giolito in that rotation as of right now?
I don't think any of the young guys will break camp with the team, barring something really surprising. You know, the Moncadas, Giolitos, Lopez, Birdie, Collins, all those guys, Kopech, are all going to get time in the minors. They'll be here at some point, but there's no rush. That's one thing that Rick Hahn made very clear, is there's not going to be a forced guy up at the majors to say, hey, look, this Sale trade was a success, or this Eaton trade was a success. When they're ready to come up, they'll come up and they'll play for the White Sox. So, I think right now it's so hard to analyze a team because you don't know how long it's going to stay the same. You know, I think, barring something surprising, things should stay as they are, which means, you know, a pretty decent rotation. You have an all-star in Quintana at the top, a rising young player in Carlos Rodon, some veterans in Miguel Gonzalez, Derek Holland, and James Shields. The bullpen is better because Zach Putnam and Jake Petrisca are healthy, and David Robertson even had a little bit of a knee thing cleaned up in the offseason. So I think, you know, they're ready to go. And a matter of fact, in the scheme of the rebuild we've all come to know in baseball, we're like, you know, what the Cubs were for a couple of years, what Houston was before they became a playoff team, what Milwaukee, Atlanta, and Philadelphia are going through now. The Sox aren't the classic rebuild. There's too many pretty solid players on this team to be the classic rebuild. So we'll see what happens as they go forward, as they, you know, the moves they make. And, you know, they're not trying to lose. They're just trying to get things the best as possible. Their biggest goal is sustaining a team that can contend for multiple titles, kind of like what the Cubs built on the north side and what Houston is built now too.
Okay. Todd Frazier, is the injury significant, or is it just a little blip on the screen?
Saw him this morning, the morning we're taping this, and he, you know, basically said he felt better. You know, if it's an oblique, that's something you got to be careful with. Those obliques can stay for a while if you push it. So I think the fact that it's a longer spring with the World Baseball Classic, you have some time. You know, you can give him a few days, and maybe if they thought it was going to be a 4-day thing, maybe he misses 6 days. He'll be ready. He knows what he has to do to get done. And they're not going to push it. There's no reason to push it because they have plenty of time. You know, we're in the end of February, and there's still a full month to go before they break camp. So I as of now, it sounds like it's fairly minor.
Talk about the catching situation. You've got some competition there, and you know, with two or maybe even three players in the mix.
Well, the catcher of the future is Zach Collins, obviously. And, you know, there was a question, is there seems to always be around draft picks, when, you know, can he do this, can he do that? When Tim Anderson came, people were thinking, well, you know, he's so athletic, he's got great speed, maybe he'll be a center fielder. But he has proven that he's a shortstop. And Collins and the Sox had the same belief that he is going to be this team's catcher for years to come. Right now, though, they have, it looks like, going to be a pretty good combination in Gio Soto, who was here in 2015 and caught for the White Sox, and Omar Narvaez, who kind of, I don't want to say burst onto the scene, but kind of made his presence felt with a good, you know, kind of end of the season call-up last year. You look at the numbers, he works great with Rodon, he works great with Quintana, so it may very well be a 3-2 split or a 2-3 split between those two. They don't really have a starter per se right now, but they have a couple good options, and then, you know, Kevin Smith and Gonzalez are also in the picture too, so they have some depth there they can work from, if not necessarily frontline all-star guys at this point.
Okay. The infield pretty much set up, or is there still some battles going on?
I think second base is the biggest thing. You know, that's apparently going to be Moncada's spot moving forward. But I think in terms of second base, you know, you have Salvatore Saldino, who played great last year after Brett Laurie got hurt and missed, you know, pretty much all of August and September. Not pretty much, it was all of August and September. Now Brett Laurie's back. He feels healthy again. His leg feels good. He's working his way towards, you know, being ready for the season. He's in the picture. And then Yolmer Sanchez, formerly known as Carlos Sanchez, is also there too. They're very high on him too, you know, switch hitter. So you have some options there. And again, that's a good thing because it reinforces the point that you don't have to rush Moncada. Moncada's got plenty of time to get up here and, you know, develop necessarily. And then, you know, once he gets here, stay here. So you have some good options. And you know, I think Saladino, I think Lowry are both on this team. Saladino's value is far beyond just second base because he can play third, he can play short, he can play first. So, you know, he's going to be a key utility guy if he's not the starting second baseman.
So what are the expectations for the Chicago White Sox in 2017?
Well, I think the expectations are just as Rick Renteria has stressed, you know, play the game right and develop these young guys and have the best season possible. It's not going to be measured on wins and losses this year. This is the first time, probably since I've covered the team, and I've covered the team 15 years, and that includes a season like, well, I guess 2014, they went in and they didn't expect to do much that year, and they didn't. They were well under 500. 2007, even, they finished 72-90 with Ozzie Guillen as the manager, but they started that year thinking they could compete, and they just didn't. It wasn't a very good team. But this year, they know they're going to take a step back in the present to kind of build for the future. So, you know, they're not looking at a playoff team. They're not looking at postseason contention. They're looking at, you know, doing things the right way, developing the young players, and then we'll see what, you know, happens with interest in some of their veterans who they don't have long-term control over and when or if they're moved during the season.
Well, Ian Kinsler comes to camp coming off a Gold Glove campaign, one which, you know, he arguably deserved it for the last few years, but he finally got it. It's interesting to watch him because you're talking about a guy maintaining really a standard of defense at second base in his mid-30s and shows no signs of slowing down. He led the Tigers in wins above replacement last year, the position players. He's got a decent shot to do it again this year, and he's going into a free agent year potentially, assuming that, you know, if the Tigers don't pick up his option for 2018. So I'm going to be interested to watch. The longer he's here, the more you sense that the Tigers really gravitate around him and go off his direction, his energy, his intensity, and his knowledge of the game. So he's really a vital part, and I think how he does and how he feels is going to say a lot for whether this club sinks or swims this year. Talking with Cabrera the other day, he feels a particular sadness over the passing of Mike Ilitch because they were so close over the years. You have to remember, Mike Ilitch, you know, was the driving force behind the trade that brought Cabrera here 9 years ago. And he signed him to two very lucrative contract extensions to ensure that he was going to spend the bulk of his career in a Tigers uniform. So talking with Cabrera, he really wants to make one more run to try to win one for Mike Ilitch, even though it would be in his memory at this point. And he's still an elite hitter, even as he heads into his mid-30s. He's coming off a year in which, you know, he showed the power. His average took a little bit of a dip, but only by his standards. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some of those numbers flip a little bit. I think there's a better batting average there, especially, you know, if he stays healthy and can leg out some hits. I know it's kind of odd to talk about with Miggy, but there is that component given his ability to make consistent contact. The home runs might take a dip. I think you expect more the power to dip as a player like that ages, but that opposite field swing, it's that doesn't desert you. And I think his hand-eye coordination is still, you know, really at the top of his game and maybe among, you know, the best you see in Major League Baseball right now. Center field is up for grabs. Talked with Brad Ausmus about that the last few days. It's really wide open, and you have four, maybe even five candidates competing for it. The way the roster shakes up, you suspect that the most likely scenario is a platoon between Mikey Matuk and Tyler Collins, a righty-lefty thing. But you still have hotshot prospect Jacoby Jones there, who's probably going to get the job sooner or later. Maybe he beats the timetable with a solid spring. You still have Anthony Gose, who was kind of long forgotten when he got sent down last summer once Cameron Maybin was ready. Ended up all the way down in Double-A after the situation with Lloyd McClendon on Toledo. But he's still fast. He still covers ground in center field. And you look to see whether he's grown up from what happened over the last year or so. And you even have a guy like Omar Infante. Me, you know, it's interesting to watch Omar Infante come back. He was an all-star as a super utility guy, including being able to cover center field. He became a full-time second baseman both, you know, here and in Kansas City. He's back fighting for a utility role, but he's still an athletic enough guy in his mid-30s that you could see him covering ground in center. So it's hard to rule out a guy like that even. So it's, you know, all those guys are going to be around for the bulk of the spring. You're not talking about World Baseball Classic candidates here. So it'll be interesting to see them compete and interesting to see who gets playing time even as the spring goes along here, who they want to see get a look. Well, Fulmer wants to, because he's not competing for a job this spring, he wants to put himself in a position where he's peaking in terms of his pitching at the end of camp rather than in the middle. So he's kind of altered some stuff there. He's done some agility work. He's worked on fastball command. He really wants to be able to locate the fastball low and on the outside corner to kind of keep it away. He announced the influence of Justin Verlander and what he was able to do with fastball command in that outer portion last year. Fulmer wants to build off of that, and he also wants to anticipate how hitters are going to adjust to him now that you've got a year's worth of video and a year's worth of scouting reports on him to kind of react. You've got Daniel Norris and Matt Boyd, two guys who, while they didn't begin the season in rotation, ended up playing huge roles down the stretch. It's really, you can argue that the Tigers wouldn't have gotten as close to a playoff spot as they did if not for what those guys did in August and September, because that was when Anibal Sanchez was still trying to find himself, Jordan Zimmerman was on the DL again, and Mike Pelfrey was kind of searching for his stuff. Now you fast forward, Zimmerman's got a spot short up if he's healthy, but you now have Sanchez and Pelfrey competing for jobs. Both are under guaranteed contracts this year, the final guaranteed seasons of their deals. Both are trying to rediscover lost stuff. Both say they feel healthy. Pelfrey in particular says that he feels different after losing about 25 to 30 pounds over the offseason, which is going to be interesting to watch how that impacts his pitching. Sanchez says his rotator cuff feels fine after it bothered him off and on last year. But they weren't the guys who got you to within a game of the wild card spot last season. So it's, you know, there's going to be some tough decisions that have to be made, both competitively and financially. And it's something where I think the front office, led by Al Avila, is bracing themselves for having to go in a tough direction one way or the other. Either holding a young guy down, or you might have to swallow some money to either trade a guy or just set him free. Well, you got the left-handed bat, which is big. You know, they wanted a guy to help balance out James McCann, who struggled mightily against right-handed hitters. He's got some ways to go there. But also, you have a guy who knows this pitching staff by and large. Yeah, he didn't catch Fulmer very much of it all. He wasn't around for that. But he obviously knows Verlander. They have a special relationship there. He knows Zimmerman from afar. He knows Anibal Sanchez. He knows the kids because they came over in the trades the summer of his last season in Detroit. So there, you don't have as much of a learning curve with him. And he's a guy who's got a reputation of being able to call a good game. He's not going to embarrass you defensively. He knows how to put himself in a position to throw guys out. So all in all, if you can get some left-handed power from him, it's a pretty good pickup, and a guy who, while he's not going to be a star for you, he's going to be able to fill out your roster quite nicely. He fits logically into the picture of this roster.
First of all, fans are expecting a bounce back season after a little bit of a disappointing season last year. How much did injuries play a part in what transpired in 2016?
I think it had a lot to do with it. I think there was just some general overall fatigue too. The team had made two straight trips to the World Series, and they just got fatigued. That we saw that early in spring training last year, and I think some of that fatigue came through during the regular season too. Some of the injuries, they just got bogged down, and it's just hard to compete when you don't have enough bodies out there, and that's kind of what happened to the Royals in 2016.
So much of this team's identity in recent years has been based on speed and defense, but they've really got some potential for power this season, especially with the new additions they have in Soler and Moss. Talk about the power potential they have, several guys potentially hitting over 20 home runs this year.
That's probably something we haven't seen the Royals have in a long time, probably since the late 90s, early 2000s. They've probably got six or seven guys that can get 20 home runs this year. You know, you're going to get a bounce back year from Alex Gordon. Mike Moustakas is healthy. They added Soler. You got Brandon Moss, Lorenzo Cain, Eric Hosmer. You just go down the list. This is probably the deepest power lineup they've had in at least 15 to 20 years. So I think you're going to see a different type of Royals offense this year. You're going to see more runs scored. You may see more runs given up too. But it's just instead of the 3-2, 2-1 nail biters, you might have some, you know, 6-4 games. And I think that's what management's hoping for.
Let's talk specifically about two of those new additions in Soler and Moss. Where do you see them fitting in on the team? I know Moss is probably a little more comfortable in right field, and I know Soler's been working with the coaching staff as far as upping his defensive right. game. Where do you think they fit in?
I think it's going to be Soler's job to start out with, and they'll just see how what his defense is going to be like. You know, they've talked a lot about this floating DH, and you know, Moss, when he was signed, was not signed to be primarily DH, so you're going to see him mixed in the outfield. Now he's not he's probably an average defensive fielder too. So we just talked about that with Ned today. You're probably going to see, you know, a lot of Paulo Orlando late in games and to help the defense, you know, get the offense early, get the defense late. Rusty Kuntz, their outfield coach, is working a lot with Soler right now, working with Brandon Moss too. So that's what the next 6 weeks are for. We're going to kind of figure out what alignment they're going to have.
Speaking of alignment, we might see Alex Gordon, at least in the spring, play all three outfield positions. How is he viewing that and that challenge, and what are your expectations from him?
I think he's excited. I think this is like fantasy camp for him. He's always wanted to play some center field and some right field, and that's part of what this 6 weeks is going to be about too. Ned wants to see different combinations because you never know what you're going to need during the regular season. So Alex is a Gold Glove left fielder. We know that, but he could also be a Gold Glove right fielder, Ned believes. And we're going to see him a bit in center field. We're going to see Moss in left field. We're going to see guys everywhere just trying to get the right combination. And then during the regular season, I think you'll see, like I mentioned, you're going to see their best defensive outfielder late in games. That's going to be Gordon, Kane, and probably Paulo Orlando.
Not that many position battles are to be won over in the spring for Kansas City, but one of them is probably the sole one, is second base. Talk a little bit about the candidates at second base and who you feel is that lead horse in the race.
I don't know if there's a lead horse right now, but it's really going to come down to Whit Merrifield and Christian Colon. I think Raul Mondesi will start out in camp in that mix, but after the way he struggled last year offensively, maybe another year of seasoning at AAA is probably best for him right now. Then again, he could wow us in spring training. We just don't know yet. We haven't even played a game yet. But it's really going to come down, I think, to Merrifield versus Colon. And it's going to be a good battle because Christian Colon really took this offseason seriously, lost about 8 to 10 pounds in conditioning. He looks great out there. We'll see how that transitions to the field. But and you know what, Merrifield's going to want to be that starting guy at second base too. So of the camp battles, I think that's the most interesting position one by far.
Speaking of the rotation, Ned has said, despite the loss that they suffer, this might be the deepest rotation that he's had since he's been here. What are your expectations from these guys?
Yeah, and that just suddenly changed in the last 2 weeks, you know, with the unfortunate passing of Yordano Ventura. You know, at one point, we were looking at we had three guys in the rotation, and after that, it was kind of, well, Nathan Carnes could be the fourth guy, Chris Young could be the... Well, now you're going to have competition with Carnes, Travis Wood and Chris Young just for the fifth spot. So it's going to be a pretty deep rotation. It might be the deepest that Ned certainly had since maybe at least 2014. You don't know how this thing will respond because Jason Vargas pitched 15 innings last year and he's coming off, you know, his TJ surgery of the year before. You know, Danny Duffy had his breakthrough year last year. You know pretty much what you're going to get from Ian Kennedy. He was very solid last year, almost got to 200 innings. But then, you know, you get your fourth and fifth spot, Jason Hamill. He's a guy who can give you probably 170, 175 innings. They're going to give Travis Wood a chance to start, like I mentioned. It should be a pretty deep rotation, you know, and I think Ned and the coaching staff are pretty excited about that.
Let's talk about the bullpen. It's been a strength of this club for the last couple of years, but gone are some of the familiar faces, and we have a lot of people in camp competing for very few spots. So how do you see this bullpen shaking out?
Well, you're gonna have to get a roster right off the bat and get, you know, just to figure out who all these guys are, because there's a lot of names from our past. You know, Jonathan Sanchez, who hasn't pitched in the big leagues since 2013. You got Albuquerque, Brandon League, Chris Withrow. You just go down the list. They just signed Peter Moylan back 2 days ago. So a lot of bodies in camp. They probably only have one or two open spots in the bullpen, so I would say estimate at least 10 guys competing for that, including some young guys. Josh DeMont is a young kid who can throw 100 miles an hour. He's still in the mix. He's not on the 40-man roster yet, but he's certainly going to get a long look this spring too.
Finally, give us the names of some of the prospects that you're looking out for or excited to see here in spring training that might not necessarily break camp with the team, but we might see during somewhere down the line in the year?
I'd be surprised if you don't see Stamont somewhere down the line, just with the power right arm he's got and the way the Royals value their bullpen and loving to have, you know, power arms in that bullpen. If he doesn't break camp with the team, I do think we're going to see him, you know, definitely part of the mix in the bullpen once the season begins. You know, we saw a lot of Matt Strom last year, so I don't know if he qualifies as a prospect anymore. He's basically got the team made. He'd have to really have a bad spring. Had terrific August and September last year. I think he had a 1.23 ERA, throws hard, has great command. So those two guys definitely. Hunter Dozier got a cup of coffee in September last year, you know, former number one pick. First round pick, I mean, and he's going to get an opportunity to, you know, get some ABs here in spring. So those are the primary guys. The
Twins are definitely looking to bounce back. Last year, losing 103 games. A young team, going to rely a lot on some of that young talent, guys like Miguel Sano, Byron Buxton, Max Kepler. The pitching is going to be key, too. Last year, the Twins finished with the worst ERA among starters. So veterans, guys like Irvin Santana, Kyle Gibson, Phil Hughes, Hector Santiago are going to be counted on to make some starts here to help this team, because last year the pitching was a big culprit for why they lost 103 games. So I think if the pitching can kind of improve here and mix with a young offense, I think they'd be a much better team in 2017. Byron Buxton in September was huge. It was definitely kind of one of those things that a lot of Twins fans have been waiting a long time to kind of see Buxton break out. Being the number one prospect for a couple years in a row by MLB.com, a lot of, you know, expectations and high hopes. He's got a ton of talent. It finally kind of showed there the last month of the season. Hit 11 home runs. Power's a little bit surprising. We know his speed. We know he's going to be a great defender in center. We know he can run the bases. But the offense has kind of always been the question mark, at least in the major leagues. But to see him finally click there in September was big, because if he can be that leadoff hitter and be an offensive player for this team to go along with his defense and base running, he can be this team's best player. So I think the future of this team really is going to kind of depend on how Buxton continues to develop. Power's going to be big for this team. Last year, the Twins hit 200 home runs. Obviously, Brian Dozier is a big part of that, but they have some young guys with power as well. Miguel Sano has, you know, unlimited power, really. I mean, it's kind of, if he can stay on the field and be healthy, big thing with Sano, too, will be his defense at third base. If he can stick at third base defensively to go along with the power he has, he's an all-star caliber player. And same thing with Max Kepler in right field. Kepler's a guy that not only has power, but he also has speed. He's a good defender. He can run the bases, hit for some average, draw some walks. Kepler, we saw him in a three home run game last year against the Indians, so the power is definitely there. He's a strong guy. He looks even stronger this year. So yeah, guys like Kepler and Sano are going to be counted on kind of right in the middle of that lineup, even though they're so young. Well, the Twins are happy that Brian Dozier is still part of the team. Obviously, he was part of a lot of trade rumors throughout the offseason, mostly with the Dodgers. Dodgers were looking for a second baseman. It made some sense. The Twins have been looking for some young pitching, but ultimately, Dozier was not traded. He's happy to be here, but he also, you know, knows it was kind of a tough offseason to kind of be yo-yoed a little bit and kind of hear he was going to get traded, and then he wasn't going to get traded, and the back and forth of it. But he's here. His power is definitely legit. We know last year, 42 home runs, tying the record for home runs by a second baseman. Impressive power, but a lot more than that. He's a leader in this club. He's a good defender at second base. The Twins are going to count on him. But at the same time, you know, if this Twins team doesn't, you know, compete, he could be traded, though, the deadline. You never know. So, but for now, he's here, and the Twins are definitely happy to have Brian Dozier as part of this team. Joe Mauer's still a leader on this team. He's been on this team longer than anybody else at this point. Coming off kind of an interesting year, had a great start. Didn't really finish great for Mauer. A lot of it was because he was hurt. He hurt his quad injury in Atlanta in August. It kind of led to another quad injury in his other leg. It slowed him down. He missed the last couple weeks of the season there. It wasn't a good finish. So I think if he can stay healthy this year, really help this team. If he's on the field, I think the Twins kind of want to put him in situations where he'll succeed a little bit better. Maybe sit him against some tough lefties, give him a little bit of breaks here and there to keep him healthy. But as long as he's part of the lineup, he helps his team because he gets on base so much. He's a leader, a guy that, you know, players can kind of follow. He's never been that rah-rah guy, obviously. You know, he's not a huge talker, but in terms of just kind of leading by example, being that guy, a lot of the young guys can definitely benefit by having Joe Mauer around. The Twins have a new front office led by Derek Falvey and Thad Levine. The big thing they're trying to do right now is kind of build a consistent winner. We know the Twins, since 2011, it's been a tough go. You know, they've had one winning season since then. They want to build a team that's going to be a consistent winner, that's going to be able to produce guys throughout the farm system, but also be able to fill in, you know, positions of need when they need to. So right now they're kind of taking a long look at the organization. The offseason didn't make too many big splashes. Jason Castro was the big signing to kind of help the pitching and the defense behind the plate. But I think going forward, it's going to be a lot of self-evaluation, a lot of, you know, new statistics, sabermetrics, things like that kind of mixed with scouting. It's kind of a mix of old school and new school at this front office. And so far, it seems like it's definitely been a success for the Twins so far. The Twins definitely have competition for the fifth starter spot. essentially two of the younger guys that are kind of part of that are Jose Berríos and Trevor May. Jose Berríos, we know, had a tough rookie year last year, but still regarded as a top prospect. Last year was the top 20 prospect coming into the year, but his ERA was above 8. I think this year he's working on his command a little bit. We know the stuff is there, so he could take a step forward for sure this year. Trevor May is a guy that started early in his career, went to relief, had some success there, but also some injury concerns there with his back. So I think having him competing for the starting rotation could make a lot of sense. They're two of the kind of younger guys that I think that Jason Castro can work with. And we know, too, a lot of young relievers in camp, too, guys like JT Chagua, Ryan Pressly, Taylor Rogers, some of these guys that definitely could get some help from a guy like Jason Castro.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.